on the Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. The Phoenix Suns beat the visiting Milwaukee Bucks Tuesday night 118-105 in Game 1 of the National Basketball Association Finals. The AP's George Tanner filed this post-game report from the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona.
Chris Paul led six players in double figures with 32 points and 9 assists. Suns beat the Bucks 118-105 to take Game 1 of the NBA Finals.
Like I said, we play a lot of basketball, watch a lot, and our coaches told us all the different things to be prepared for. We played against these guys twice. We prepared for Giannis or not Giannis, you know, so we're sure they're going to make some adjustments going into game two, and we'll probably do the same.
Devin Booker added 27 points and 6 assists. DeAndre Ayton, a double-double, 22 points and 19 rebounds, something he said was key.
You know, that's what we really get the offense going, especially, just try to clean up some of that stuff so we can get on the run and give ourselves some momentum as well.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had 20 points and 15 rebounds for the Bucks in his first game back from a knee injury.
Felt great. The medical staff cleared me to play. Out there I had my balance. Felt my knee was stable. Did not feel pain. So I felt good.
Chris Middleton led Milwaukee with 29.
We've been through a lot. We've been through it all. We know it's not going to be easy. We know it's not going to be tough. There's times where we're going to be down in the series, but the series isn't over yet if we're down. We still got to keep competing and just playing.
George Tanner, Phoenix.
Thanks, George. Game 2 of the NBA Finals is Thursday night in Phoenix. From Phoenix, let's go to Silvis, Illinois, where another George, George McNeely, reports South African golfer Dylan Fratelli will be defending his title this week at a tournament celebrating its 50th anniversary.
In September of 2020, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan proudly announced a season that would feature 50 fully sponsored official FedEx Cup tournaments, including 14 that were either postponed or canceled during the pandemic. One of those COVID-19 cancellations, the John Deere Classic, in what was supposed to be the 50th anniversary edition, a place known to be where magic happens.
We've gotten to see Jordan Spieth win here. We've gotten to see Tiger Woods contend here. We've gotten to see Tom Watson almost win here, dating back to 1972.
The year Watson lost to journeyman pro and future PGA Tour Commissioner Dean Beaman. Craig DeVries, a longtime sports writer, a trusted friend, and author of the recently published and appropriately titled Magic Happened, celebrating 50 years of the John Deere Classic.
Quad Cities is a holdover. Quad Cities is the last survivor. We are the Packers, George, of the PGA Tour.
Craig DeVries references the community-owned National Football League franchise in Green Bay, Wisconsin, the NFL's smallest market. And here we are, bordering two states, what's known as the Quad Cities, which are comprised of Davenport and Bettendorf, Iowa, along with Rock Island and Moline, Illinois, with a population similar to Green Bay, under 400,000. A fact not lost on defending champion Dylan Fratelli.
I think a lot of events we go to, there's high stress, there's high energy, and it's a tough one to play, but it just feels easy to head out there and just sort of have a nice, relaxing week.
The Quad Cities is the smallest per capita location hosting the PGA Tour, yet still sets records every year for charitable giving. Once again, Magic Happened author Craig DeVries.
I think we know who we are, and that's why the date that we've had and the feels that we get. I think we have four top 20 in the world here this week. That works for us, George.
Much of the $133 million that has been raised for charity since the inception of this tournament has come since a rebranding in 1999 as the John Deere Classic. The iconic Moline-based company is headquartered right here in the Quad Cities. In fact, Deere & Company donated the land to create what's now TPC Deere Run, the host course since 2000, and one for Telly Concord in 2019.
Fun golf course. So it's also away from a big city. There's not much hustle and bustle, and that's kind of my view and things. I don't like going to these fancy cities and big lights and doing that whole scene. So I think for me, it's a big draw. And I think there are a few other players that appreciate that too.
So as the John Deere Classic celebrates its golden anniversary this week, the winner, if not already qualified for next week's Open Championship, will board a flight Sunday night for Royal St. George's. Since 2004, the highest finisher in the top five in ties who had not yet secured a berth in the Open Championship gets an incomparable fringe benefit. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm George McNeely in Silvis, Illinois.
Thanks, George. If you tuned in to Tuesday's Sunny Side of Sports, you heard Magume Davis Rakawinj tell us about the 29-member refugee Olympic team for the upcoming Tokyo Games. The chef de mission for the team is former Kenyan running star Tegla Larupe. And Magume joins us once again this evening with a feature profile of Tegla.
Tegla Lolupe holds the world records in both 25 and 30 kilometers and previously held the world marathon record. She was also the first African woman to win the New York Marathon. She says her entry into long-distance athletics was by fate.
I grew up in a very remote area where by going to school I was running 10 kilometers. So I found myself a long-distance runner. Because 10 kilometers, like 20 kilometers a day is already, you are training for the marathon.
Tegla says this rendered her endurance, and starting with 3,000 meters, she graduated marathon, where she went on to win many, including Rotterdam Marathon, Berlin Marathon, Leipzig Marathon, and as already mentioned, the renowned New York Marathon. Just like her introduction to athletics, her entry to peace activism was equally inspired by circumstances. Her village, Kapsait, of West Pokot, some more than 600 kilometers north of Nairobi, was characterized with cattle rustling. Growing up, Tegla says she suffered a lot of social injustices, but decided to use that positively, impacting on others.
They used to say, okay, Tegla is not a good person because he comes from this conflict area. And when I represent the country, sometimes they used to leave me behind because I had nobody to talk or to protect me. And because of the stigma. So I went through the stigma, but it did not kill my motivation to succeed. And I was lucky that I went to Germany and I was able to conquer all the difficulties.
Though still an active athlete, she was usually invited to speak to young people and become an active member of Peace and Sports Foundation, an organization that uses sports to champion peace in communities. But there was one final spark for her to come back home and engage with her community.
I was also the victim that our animals were stolen to Uganda, all the animals from my farm. And finally, the government of Uganda returned the animals because they realized this animal comes from Tegla, and they say, well, she's our daughter who sued for Africa.
With support from the Kenyan government, she started a peace race in her area, bringing local communities from Uganda, South Sudan, and Kenya. She never looked back, eventually started incorporating refugees.
When they came from Sudan, some came to Kakuma, some came to our region, and they settled there. As an athlete, I used to feel so bad when we go to Europe, and for them they stay.
And when a chance came from IOC for her to help and fine-tune refugees to represent at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics, she took it with open hands, consequently becoming the chef de mission. Kenyan sports analyst Isaac Swira says other sportsmen and women should learn a lot from her acts of kindness and compassion.
I think she's done a lot for Kenyan athletics. She's an icon. Look at the investment she's made in Rift Valley just to tap talent, to nurture, and to give them hope and a chance to fulfill their potential.
Tegla says he's proud to associate with refugees.
Going to Rio, it was just to open doors to see if the other people will come in to support. But they have realized now that the refugees are it's almost like another nation, because they are all of us, and we will never get rid of refugees unless we get rid of a war. But still, if the conflict is still in this world, we still have these displaced people. Today, after Rio, most of our athletes became ambassadors, and many nations and also NOCs accepted the support to support the refugees.
As the chef de mission, Tegla says she believes her refugee Olympics team could bang a medal also and make the whole world proud. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta has been talking with Julius Yago, Kenya's former world javelin champion and the 2016 Olympic silver medalist. Julius is currently training for the Tokyo Olympics in Japan, where he hopes to get back on the medals podium. Prince asked Julius, what do you have planned after the Olympics?
After the Olympics, of course, if it will be a successful one for me, of course, I'll come back home, have some holiday, and wait for next year. We have the World Championship again in the U.S., so that is the plan we have. We focus now, after the World Championship, is to focus for next season, where we have the World Championship. And, you know, winning the World Championship, of course, is a glorious moment. And I'm sure that I have a very big, cheering spot in the U.S. I remember when I was competing here in the Diamond League in 2016, and, everybody was cheering for me. And I'm sure, competing in that stadium is a special stadium. And you've seen that the performance of the U.S. At times were amazing. Amazing records were broken there. So looking forward to competing at that. That's a special stadium.
People are going to be so excited to see you since, as I mentioned, you are an inspiration to many, especially people who just look for YouTube to, get to learn stuff from YouTube. And of course, you started your javelin career by watching famous superstars who are basically throwing the javelin. And, you managed to become a world champion and Olympic silver medalist, which is a total inspiration. Quickly, please take us through your preparations or practices. So what time do you wake up in the morning and what do you do? Take us through your daily routine as far as practices is concerned.
It's a simple one. I wake up in the morning at 7, take my breakfast. Now it depends with the kind of workout I have at that every morning. It, of course, it's not the same the whole week. It's different. So if my coaches say this is the time I'm going to the field, but normally we will start our training at 9:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we finish the workout, have some rest, take lunch, have some rest again, and we go back again in the evening. So it's not like it's a complicated schedule, but it's just a simple one. And I enjoy it, especially when you're working with your coach. You enjoy it. Yeah.
I see. Interesting stuff. Any challenges you're facing in terms of your preparations? And I'm sure you've already mentioned in terms of, not having a coach, which is one of the challenges. But any other challenges you're facing in terms of your preparations?
I think at the moment, other things are sorted out. I have my facilities. I have my training equipment. So I think that was the main issue for me. The main challenge was, coming to camp and there's nobody to look at you. It's a matter. It's a big blow. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that, they say they promised that they will be able to sort out the issue. Mm-hmm. So when I'm training with my coach, of course, he will tell me that, I think we are going in the right direction. So, but when you are alone, it's not happiness. It's not happiness when you're training alone. And so the main challenge, of course, was that training without a coach. But other issues, I think I'm okay. Yeah.
Lastly, there are people listening to you right now. There are children listening to you right now. There are people who look up to you. You've got a big fan base that, you know, follows you. What message would you like to give to that young athlete listening to you right now? They would like to throw the javelin further than, you know, what you did during the World Championship. And of course, you broke a couple of records. What would you tell that athlete who is coming up and is looking up to you?
Of course, what I will tell an upcoming athlete, someone who is looking upon me as an inspiration, that just be yourself, believe in yourself. Nothing is impossible. And Eliud told us that no human is limited. And I believe in that, you can do what you believe in and you will make it in life. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that maybe I've thrown 92 meters. So be yourself. Yes, take an inspiration from me. But don't try to be like Diego. Try to be yourself. I want somebody who is looking beyond 92 meters, someone who wants to throw even 100 meters. So believe in that and it will come out. I remember when I was still throwing 70s and 60s and watching the great athletes at the moment, at that moment, Andreas Dolkisten from Norway, Terupit Kamaki from Finland, throwing 90 meters. To me, I always believed that one day I will be able to throw 90 meters, and it came out. So follow your dream. And you will be able to make it. Of course, be disciplined, be prayerful as well, because without God, everything is flat. It's okay. But when you believe in God, pray, have vision, determination, and you will make it in life. Nothing is impossible. Follow your dream and all will come out. To ask our fans to pray for us as we go for Olympics, to pray for us to arrive there safely. You know the world how it is. We have the issue of COVID. I'm looking forward to, you know, taking the team which is COVID-free and everybody else will be able to compete, and that will be my happiness. So pray for us. We will try our best to make you happy, as always.
That's Julius Yego, Kenya's former world javelin champion and the 2016 Olympic silver medalist. And Julius was talking with Prince Nesta from Kenya.
Hi, my name is Julius Yego, former world javelin champion and Olympic silver medalist. And you are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, it's the Africa edition. What's the latest on the ceasefire in the Tigray region of Ethiopia? Can the government in Addis Ababa and the Tigray Defense Forces reach a compromise, or will conflict continue? We talk with two regional experts about the situation in Ethiopia and democratic backsliding in Nigeria and elsewhere. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America.
Away first time. Good running there from Simbine. Simbine in five, leading at the moment, also having good run is Rogers. Simbine takes it by about a metre and a half. But that, one of the biggest wins of Akane Simbine's career.
And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Akane Simbine. The South African sprinter set a new African 100 meters record on Tuesday in Hungary, where he clocked 9.84 seconds. Simbine broke the African record previously held by Nigeria's Olusoji Fosuba, who ran a time of 9.85 seconds 15 years ago in Qatar. With his record-breaking run in Hungary, Akane Simbine showed he's ready to contend for a medal at the upcoming Tokyo Olympics, which officially open on July 23rd in Japan. Now, Simbine also won the 200 meters B race in Hungary with a time of 20.25 seconds. Meanwhile, at the same meet in Hungary, Hugues Fabrice Zongo of Burkina Faso broke his own African record in the men's triple jump, landing at 17 meters 82.
I'm Lightning Bolt. I'm not Flash Gordon anybody. My name is Lightning Bolt.
The Lightning Bolt, Usain Bolt, believes he could have broken his world record of 9.58 seconds over 100 meters if he was wearing a brand of the latest generation of super spikes. The Lightning Bolt is now retired, the Jamaican star told the Guardian newspaper, and I quote, "We have guessed and we have talked about it, but I don't know for sure, but definitely much faster, below 9.5 seconds for sure, without a doubt." And the Lightning Bolt added, "How can I argue if World Athletics decides that it's legal? I can't do anything about it. The rules are the rules. I don't think I'll be fully happy, but it's just one of those things." The Lightning Bolt perhaps getting a little concerned that a current athlete wearing those super spikes might break his world records.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
One of the sports that will be making its Olympic debut in Tokyo is skateboarding. And 16-year-old American skateboarding prodigy Bryce Wettstein has her eyes on the Olympic medals podium. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Maxim Muskalkov tells us more about Bryce Wettstein.
Skateboarder, surfer, student, songwriter. That's how 16-year-old California native Bryce Wettstein describes herself on her website. Since she was 13, Wettstein has been a rising star of the U.S. women's skateboarding team. She started skateboarding when she was only 5, but it seems she already knew it would be her life.
One time where my dad told me he was going to go skateboard in a pool somewhere, and I said, I kind of knew about skateboarding, and I was like, what do you mean you're going to go skateboard in a pool? And it ended up not being a pool that you swim in, but a pool that was drained of water. And it was actually a pool that you can skateboard in. And the whole time I'm just thinking, this can't be real. This isn't really happening.
Before dedicating her life to skateboarding, Bryce tried dancing, gymnastics, basketball, volleyball, and surfing. But it was skateboarding that became her true passion.
It's always there to captivate you. It's kind of like your other half in a way. And I realized that everywhere I've went, it's never the same thing every day.
For Bryce's father, Max, a pilot by profession, skateboarding has always been just a hobby. Bryce's mother, Donna, wasn't too happy her daughter took up skateboarding. Too dangerous.
I wasn't really that stoked. I was glad that she was doing it, but I wanted her to experience a bunch of other things as well, dancing.
Today, Bryce has her own ramp in her backyard. Her father spent 6 years and at least $25,000 to build it for her. Many say competitive skateboarding is similar to figure skating and gymnastics, a demanding physical activity with stunts and a panel of judges that assess performance. But Bryce says it's a very inspiring sport where one needs a lot of creativity as well.
Judges don't always judge on how difficult it is or the exact precise thing, because like when you're skateboarding, there's this element of innovativeness that everybody brings to this tabletop.
Wettstein also is passionate about objecting to the stereotype that skateboarding is more suitable for men than women.
When girls are skating, they never have to look to someone else or try to fit.
Bryce's dream to make it to the Olympics is about to come true this July. She's one of Team USA's hope for a gold medal at the Tokyo Games.
If I ever got on the podium of the Olympics, honestly, I never have any words for it, because I think a lot of times you could just see that the tear ducts would unwrap and you just start crying.
But win or lose, Wettstein says taking part in the Olympics is the most important part for her. Skateboarding will include two disciplines. The first one is street skateboarding, which focuses on flat ground tricks, grinds, slides, and aerials within urban environments and public spaces. The second one is park skateboarding that takes place on special ramps. Among 80 sportsmen competing for medals, 16 are Americans. 16-year-old Bryce Wettstein won the 2019 National Championship for Women's Park and is widely seen as Team USA's top medal contender.
I want everybody this year to see that skateboarding can be everything.
Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Maxim. England will host Denmark later Wednesday evening at Wembley Stadium in London in a much-anticipated semifinal match at the European Football Championship. The winner will take on Italy in the Euro 2020 final. The Italians beat Spain 4-2 on penalty kicks on Tuesday. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with a preview of the England-Denmark match. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Newspaper headlines across England are calling on its football team to make history on Wednesday by defeating Denmark in the semifinals. It's been 25 years since England last played in a Euro semifinal match, and manager Gareth Southgate told reporters his young squad is ready to take it one step further.
We're very excited about the game, that's for sure, and we know that we're going to have tremendous support throughout the country, so that's a great feeling for us. I think we're ready for the game. I think the players are ready. They've got tremendous experience now themselves, having been in this situation before, so I think our preparation's been calm, and we know we're playing a really good opponent. We knew that before the autumn. We knew even more so after the games in the autumn. So it's going to be a really, really tight game, I think, and I think an exciting game for everybody.
On Wednesday, team captain Harry Maguire will be at the heart of England's defense, which has yet to concede a goal in the tournament. Ahead of the match, Maguire told reporters the memory of losing the World Cup semifinal in 2018 has been a strong motivator for their success in the Euros.
I think through the hard work since our defeat to Croatia, every game that we've played, we've tried to improve on. Every game in this tournament, we feel like we're improving, we're getting better. I think we can still get better, and I think we will do. But yeah, I think the belief's there. We have a great group, exceptional talent, and some great leaders and some great experience too. So it's a good mixture. I think we're in a lot better place than what we was. I think the experience of that we would have learned from it, and also the experience of the games in between as well. For example, the Nations League. So we've had a lot of big games in that period to improve on. Yeah, I think. Of course, we're in a better place now, but like I say, we've still got a long way to go.
Maguire has come a long way since an ankle injury he suffered in May forced him to miss the remainder of the domestic season, including a defeat in the Europa League to Villarreal. But the star defender says he's proud of his ability to bounce back and play a role in England's quest to become European champions.
We have a great opportunity to do it this year. We're not taking Denmark lightly by any means. We know they're a very tough team. They've got some great players, and they're obviously a great unit of a team as well. So, he's right in terms of that. It hasn't come home in this competition for us, but we're in a great position where we're two games away. So it's important that our focus is on tomorrow night and about us and what we can do. And we know if we can get it right, then it should be enough to get us over the line.
And manager Gareth Southgate says consistency will be the key for his side to make history.
At the moment, we've got everybody available. We have got one or two checks to make tonight. In terms of the system, I think over the last 3 years, we've always been flexible with our tactical approach. We always have to try to pick the right approach for the opponent. Denmark have been changing during matches, so they've got real fluidity with their selection, and we'll have to be aware of that during the game. I think the players are aware of that, and we've got players that make good decisions on the field now. They've got experience of coming up against different systems. They know how to counter those systems, and they know where to find the spaces. So it's great, because we've been working together for quite a long time now, that we understand our own patterns of play, and it means that there's a consistency in the way that we operate, really.
The winner of Wednesday's match will face Italy in the Euro 2020 Championship Final on Sunday. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. And that wraps up the July 7th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.